Seventh Element with a song called I Do Believe. Hope that you've enjoyed it as much as we've enjoyed bringing it to you. And we'll be bringing you You Are the Inspiration in between. We'll make sure that we bring that one as well. It is Thursday. It's Thought Leadership Thursday. And today we're looking at the issue of leadership in Ethiopia. Coincidentally, as I mentioned earlier on, the president of South Africa is still unable to start with his speech because the EFF is still holding him ransom at this stage. And so I want to ask Kuputmonde here, what are your thoughts there?
Good evening to you, and good evening to the listeners. Maybe they're also watching the State of the Nation and not listening to us.
They are, in fact, listening to us.
So I don't know. I almost said, should we do it today? Because our country, you know, is having the State of the Nation. And for me, theoretically, State of the Nation is a key moment in the country. In my view, everything should come to a standstill because, yes, the number one is talking, but we want to get a feel of where the country is, where it's going, because the amount of work that goes into a state of the nation, it's not just the president that's sitting and thinking through issues. There's a whole system behind things that go into that address. And you know, maybe at some point when you invite government people here to come and explain the legislative processes and the structure of government. So, you know, the president is the head of government and the head of state, right? Ethiopia have a prime minister and a president. So just to come and explain those processes.
I know they are very costly. That's one bit.
Well, if they were effective, we wouldn't mind how much it costs. You see, that becomes the paradox, sometimes even the irony of the issue. So you're spending so much, but you don't see the output. So yeah, so that's what I think SONA should be. But, you know, the commentary coming out of the media, South Africans being interviewed, articles have been written the past week. I mean, the DA, I was listening to you just before I got here, the DA is dressed in black. So they are more. They're in mourning. The DA is mourning. I listened to John Steenhuisen's address at that time, and I sat and listened to what he had to say. They call it the real state of the nation. They just kind of saying they've got better ideas. Where they govern, things seemingly are better. But what's happening in Khayelitsha? What's happening in Gwalanga? What's happening in the black townships in the Western Cape? That's another story as well. But yeah, that's what they are basically saying. They're saying we should trust the DA government. That's the only logical solution. And they, here and there, he was trying to argue that an EFF ANC coalition is a no-no next year. So yeah, 2024 politically in South Africa is a key moment. Of course, what we also saw government, the presidency as well, stating some of the priority issues that they've been looking at and almost trying to kind of mirror where there's been successes and where there have not been successes. So, you know, it just really puts a spotlight for me on We're so dependent on an individual. Can't be. You can remove President Ramaphosa, and because we have a representative democracy in South Africa, the party decides who is their president and deputy president, and that party is not necessarily representative of the country views.
That's certainly what's happening.
So that's how it's happened. So we have not necessarily been 100% prepared for this moment that we are living through, where we are seeing, you know, public infrastructure dilapidate, where we're seeing mismanagement of funds. Local government is, in fact, local government has always been a challenge in the country. So many different plans as well, from the RDP to ASCISA. That's on the macro view.
Yeah.
The national growth path, then the national development plan, 10-point plan, reconstruction and recovery plan.
Hey.
You name it. They're all there at a macro level, and the private sector putting pressure on reforms. So for me, an individual is representative of the people that put him there, he or she, there, and we can't expect him to really, really try and put first things first, because we can see the state of play, how government ministers, how he plays that game. You can see that he needs to balance things and balance people, balance opinions. Then you've got the tripartite alliance, you know, alliance partners, balance their views. Do you put them in cabinet or not? But for me, with the ministries generally, the issue for me is the DGs. So those are the CEOs.
Yeah.
And not necessarily the political heads.
Yeah.
Then again, issue of governance for me again, the separation of the executive and the non-executive. There's been too much political interference as well. And then the issue of legislation as well, and regulations and policy. So the dominant party has got policies. Then they send them into government, and then they need to make the policies law or regulations reflect there throughout the political system. Then they need to work on that. It goes through that cycle. Then the president signs it into law. But it starts as a party policy.
Yeah.
So what will happen, therefore, and I think it's one of those things as South Africans we need to think about, what will happen if the policies that became laws, that became regulations later on, when you now have a dominant party that no longer has the political stronghold within parliament. Now, let's say NC drops below 40%, and let's say we have a miraculous party that just comes in at 51%, right? So now they've got the majority vote. And then let's say they have two-thirds majority. Now you can even change the constitution when you have two-thirds majority. So now you can see now that really to understand these mechanisms, right, as to how policy evolves into legislation and then regulation and law, etc. It all comes from the party policies, whatever party it is. And then they go in there, then they drive their policy positions and use their majority. That's why the other parties will always complain and say, they're always using their majority. They're the majority.
That's how it works.
That's how it works. Yeah. Then Parliament also has its portfolio committees, as we saw now with the Tottenham Hotspur issue. That the minister being summoned by the portfolio committee and almost like the portfolio committee was disciplining the minister. You say, you know, you are accountable to parliament. Again, those are other lines as well. So once you get into parliament, my view is that you should take off your
political
party positions. You've got to take off that regalia. And then you put on a South African regalia. Now you're representing everybody in parliament. And that's going to take, I think it's going to take a while. So I honestly don't know how next year is going to pan out. Interesting projections. But again, we must be mindful. There's a massive group of people who do not vote.
Yeah, sure.
Now, if those people vote, which way will they go? Just those who stayed away, right? Massive, massive group. Less than 50% voted in terms of population. That's dangerous. Now imagine if we get up to 78-80% of eligible voters actually voting. It's going to be an interesting outcome. Or it may be a dominant outcome, right? So I don't know. And I know we're on a Seventh-day Adventist platform, and SDA believes we should not engage in in voting or promoted in even in local churches. Mm. You know, when you'd have these tied to these conversations at local church, say no. It's a personal choice.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. Let me just put it out there. Is that if we are going to continue saying we shy away from certain things that make decisions on our behalf, where's the logic there?
Mm.
So if we stay away from everything that we should influence that can make not just our lives better,
mm.
but the lives of people, the people that we're saying we are been sent by God to serve,
mm.
you know, what's the point?
I suppose we serve at a different level, right? And that's where the argument comes from, right? To say our job is more, you know, on the religious space, and that's where we can make the difference. And let's leave politics to politicians, and they do that. But I think it's a whole lot of a discussion that we can unpack, you know, and look at that and try and make sense and answer that very, very question there that you're very about to say. You know, where are we? And maybe that's where we should start with that one. Is there a vacuum in Ethiopia when it comes to leadership?
Well, let me start here, because I think Ethiopia is very interesting
mm.
space. Let me start here, where we usually start.
Yeah.
So, again, looking at some of the indexes.
Yeah.
So out of 137 countries,
mm-hmm.
In terms of their political transformation, Ethiopia is sitting at 99.
Okay.
In terms of their economic transformation,
mm-hmm.
Out of 137, they are sitting at 116.
Sure. Okay.
In terms of their governance index,
yeah.
they are sitting at 89.
Oh wow! Out of 137 as well.
137.
Okay.
So there's been some interesting gains there.
Yeah.
And then just having a little bit at a look at that political transformation,
mm.
They've got a hardline autocracy.
Okay. Okay.
Right. Now it's becoming a really dominant thing. I mean, every
yeah,
week
as you go up,
we are seeing, you know, similar patterns.
Yeah.
Economic transformation is very limited, so it's not rudimentary like mm-hmm. other parts of the continent. Governance index,
mm-hmm.
it's weak.
Yeah.
So it's better than the other
mm-hmm.
places that we've been looking at. Population, 115 million.
That's the entire population.
That's the population.
Okay.
Population growth is about 2.5% per annum.
Okay.
Life expectancy is 66.6 years.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
Urban population is 21.7%.
Yeah, so the rest of the others are in the rural areas.
Yep, and poverty is about 68.9%.
Hmm.
So, in some respects, it is a slightly better place.
Mm.
But one of the captions that's coming out of the reports is that there will be no peace without power sharing.
Okay.
In Ethiopia.
Yeah.
Right. Which is very interesting. In other parts, it's again issues of civil war.
Mm.
Etc.
Mm.
The other interesting thing for me in Ethiopia is that, and President Begi had spoken about this, and every now and then when he reflects on Ethiopia, he brings this issue to the fore.
Mm.
Now, we know that historically, during the years of imperialism,
mm.
Colonialism on the continent, Ethiopia was very difficult to breach.
Mm. Yes.
Yeah, very difficult to breach. And also the only African country that has not been colonized.
Colonized, definitely.
The only.
Yeah.
Right? And that's quite an achievement.
Yeah.
And when President Begi speaks about this particular battle, which was the major turning point, it's called the Battle of Adwa.
Yeah.
In 1896.
Mm.
On the 1st of March, and the Italians trying to really to do what they thought they'd be able to do.
Mm.
But the Ethiopians said, not here and not now.
Mm.
So they maintain their independence. This is a very key issue.
Mm.
Ethiopia maintained their independence under Emperor Menelik II.
Okay.
And I'll go back to what's really coming out as to what possibly made them win the battle.
Okay.
So the battle today is still remembered and it's still celebrated, right?
Mm.
So, which is very important as well to know the history and to celebrate our independence from imperialism.
Mm.
I don't know, maybe it's because they, you know, in the Bible, there's the Ethiopian, the first missionary to Africa in terms of recorded.
Yeah.
They already were worshipping Yahweh, right?
Yeah.
So they were not coming from a pagan perspective, being converted from paganism into Christianity, but moving from Judaism, into Christianity.
Yeah.
Again, an interesting historic fact: the Ethiopian Bible,
yeah,
is the oldest Bible in history.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Right, so it's got other books than the 66 that we are accustomed to, but the important thing is that they had the oldest Bible in their language.
Yeah,
right? So it wasn't in a different language. So again, you can see how far independence goes. Right, you can be very independent. Secondly, the importance of God's word being translatable, translated into the indigenous languages for the people to understand. Because again, Jesus, you can say, translated himself into human flesh.
Yeah.
Right. So the word became flesh.
Yeah.
We are flesh, became flesh.
Mm.
And it must also become language, right? It must become. As it moves, therefore go, it becomes that which the people in that place see and understand and become acclimatized to it, accustomed to it, because it is like them.
Mm.
It is for them.
Mm.
And I think those are very key issues to look at. I'm not a theologian, but those are very key issues from a religious point of view, that in fact, Ethiopian Bible is the oldest, and therefore those who want to argue that other biblical issues, you can test the veracity, you know. So the Bible is open for scrutiny.
Yes.
It's not a closed book.
Mm.
It's open to be scrutinized academically as well, you know. And that it just keeps proving itself
right,
without you and I studying it.
Yes.
And I'm saying that the translatability of God's word, Ethiopia stands out for me as that African nation maintained its independence, maintained its religio-spiritual independence, or put it that way, or the other way around, spiritual religious independence, be able to understand things for themselves. And therefore, they were even able to push back at outsiders, so to speak, who wanted to take over their land and take over everything else and their cultural heritage. I once got involved in a debate somewhere.
Yeah.
I won't tell you where. And we're talking about colonialism and its impact and the story of Ethiopia comes about. I remember, I mean, a lot of respect for this leader. He asked this question. He says, they were not colonized, but what does Ethiopia have to show for them not being colonized?
Well, they've got their religio, aspect that they can show. I mean, read the Bible. Ethiopia is mentioned almost over a dozen, 10 times in the Bible at least. So maybe they've got that to show.
So I'm saying it's an interesting debate, right, as to what do they have to show for them not being colonized. What do you have to show for for your status, where you are in life or as a nation, what do you have to show? That's why I'm saying the state of the nation becomes very important, pivotal moment.
But that question also itself is a little bit dangerous because it has connotations that almost suggest that colonization had something good about it, which would be a Helen Zille statement.
it's not what he was saying.
Yeah.
He was probing. That's what I'm saying. I was involved in the debate.
Yeah, it's a probe. I get that.
So he's saying, tell me what do they have to show for it? Right? Mm. What have they done? Mm. The question is, what have they done? Mm. And that's why I'm also arguing that because of their independence, they, in my view, were able to... That's why there's the Ethiopian Bible, for an example. But that's pre... That's pre the Battle of Adwa.
Mm.
But them being that advanced spiritually...
Mm.
By the time the Battle of Adwa comes, you know, they cemented in who they are.
Mm.
And there's two specific things that I picked up that made them different than other places.
Mm.
But I'll come back to that. I'll come back to that. So they still celebrate, right, the Battle of Adwa and their independence from imperialism, which is very, very, very important. Mm. They have one of the fastest growing economies, right? Which is again very, very positive thing.
I mean, they grew during COVID, and the rest of the world was going south. They were going up.
Yes,
which is interesting.
So, one of the fastest growing economies. Yeah. They've got a large young population.
Mm-hmm.
Abundant natural resources.
Mm-hmm.
Agriculture plays quite a big role in the economy. But they have limited access to technology, finance, infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the economic reforms which have been taking place around foreign direct investment, private sector development, improving the business environment. But here's the challenging thing again now. Mm. The issue of ethno-national federalism.
Okay, that's a big word.
Versus national centralism.
Yes, exactly. Parts of it, we mentioned it during the week when you're looking at the economics of Ethiopia and also the social cultural context. It seems like they don't care about the nation. They care about their own ethno-central. We are here in Western Cape and we don't care about the rest of South Africa. I mean, that's the Xhosa people there.
So that's the challenge.
Yeah.
That's the challenge. And the three major ethnicities, Oromo.
Yeah.
Amhara and the Tigray.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So we have those major blocks. Mm. Right?
Yeah.
So ethno-national federalism versus national centralism. So now that is the major fires there.
Now let's unpack that a little bit.
Yeah.
What are the implications for that? Because then it raises questions around can the economy of that country, Ethiopia, change for the better if they don't really care about the nation? They only care that we are Zulus, we are from Amhara, or, you know.
So here's a major thing, and I'm going to use Shaka Zulu as an example.
Yeah.
So you have Shaka Zulu.
Yeah.
Who wants to unite the Zulus,
right?
First step, one of the steps, want to unite the Zulus, just sort out this Zulu thing.
Yeah,
there's one king, right?
Mm-hmm.
let's sort this out. One of the steps,
yeah,
let's change the military strategies, let's make the spear shorter, etc. Right? Brilliant guy, right? Beyond that, he would not have been set, and he was not satisfied with just okay. I've sorted out KwaZulu.
The Zulu people, yeah.
Right. I want to now take over other parts.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm saying. It's one of the implications of this ethno-national federalism is that you want your ethnicity to dominate
the others.
The others and dominate the country.
Mm.
You see. And by doing so, there's no way that you'll dominate if you don't pick up arms. Because that's one of the ways in which and conquering nations or conquering villages has always been part and parcel of economic exploits globally. You even had African countries conquering Europe. Right? It's not taught, but conquering Europe. The statues of black people across Europe, even in Russia. So you can see that, well, one, black people have been ambitious to try and take over the world. Right? So it's not enough to be territorial here. You want to see if you can extend your influence. Right? So that's the challenge of wanting to dominate and not wanting to share space. Number two, because you're wanting to dominate and not share space, you may even overlook what is best economically. For not only your region,
but for the people,
but for the people, for the country.
Yeah.
Because this thing has taken root to say that it's about our language, our culture, etc. What the Afrikaners did then in South Africa, 94, they ensured that that small Afrikaner place, I forgot its name now. I remember it just now. Come on. Anyway, they made sure that they tried to protect themselves even constitutionally, that they've got a place of their own.
That place in the Northern Cape?
Yes, that place.
Yeah.
So you and I, it would be difficult to go there. Very difficult to go there. There's pockets of that mindset in other places, but it's there, and they've tried to maintain. And when they defend that issue, no, we want to protect our heritage, we want to protect our culture, we want to protect. What Nelson Mandela was trying to do, and that kind of leadership style, is very difficult to master. To put different people together, different ideologies together, and trying to create something new by using diversity.
So it's like defining what the future should look like for everyone's benefit.
Yes.
So it's a smart city, although we don't have it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he tried to do that, and the skill, the ability to go and talk to different people and saying to your people here, look guys, let's disband the armed struggle. Right? Let's put it down. Let's go talk to them and tell them that, look, we've disbanded. So please quieten down your right wing forces. Right? And again, these are some tactics which they could use to try and control the heat. So they can draw attention to the tough questions. Right? How do we work together? Or in fact, what exactly is dividing us? And give people more responsibility around some of these contentious issues, right? So, and which they are very difficult. Very difficult to unite people who are fundamentally standing on a position that we're different. And
that's it.
And that's it.
Yeah.
So it really takes a leadership of a special type to come on board and say, look, we are different. That's what makes us stronger. Right? Let's engage and let's create a new society. And if that is not sorted out, even local business will suffer. Because now it would be, no, what ethnicity are you? This is our region. So why are you? Why are you trying to do business? Here.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So no. Don't go to your region. And go do business there.
So are we saying that the president and the prime minister of Ethiopia are not engaging in that type of conversation?
I'm not saying they are not.
Yeah.
I'm highlighting the importance of. And continuous engagement of that high-level discussion around how do we utilize our differences instead of saying or removing them altogether?
Now, I'm asking that because I didn't find trace either of such conversations that are held by any of the presidents that have, taken the helm in Ethiopia. And that for me means that it wasn't there. It's recorded everywhere that this is what Mandela did, right? It's recorded everywhere when he chose a person from a different political party to be part of his executive team, right? Which was something that was not expected of him, but he knew the effect that that would have in sort of trying to bring everyone around the table, right? And build a coherent non-tribalistic government that can now take South Africa into a new, into a better future, right? Although the rest of the other guys just messed it up. But he understood what that would do, which normally a leader, and that's what is happening right now, even with the current ones, they would never take someone from another political party and bring them in. But that has, I couldn't find anything like that either in Ethiopia.
Yeah. Unfortunately not.
Yeah.
So I think it's something that they need to learn. Mm. They need to really learn from others, and that's a lesson for all leaders in all spaces. What can you learn from different groups?
But what's interesting also, just so to come in there, is that the African Union was there in Addis Ababa.
Yeah, in Addis Ababa.
Yeah, so I'm failing to understand why we can't have these conversations in Ethiopia when the African Union was centralized there.
Yeah. Well, look, it's a tough one. It's really a tough one. But it's interesting that system of having a prime minister and a president already shows you that they somewhat wanting to separate. So there is a national CEO, prime minister, and then you have a political face or non-executive chair of the country, which is the president. Right? So that's an interesting setup. It's almost like the setup in Eswatini.
Yeah,
there's a prime minister.
Yeah.
Then the royalty is the one that is the face.
Yeah.
Just like in Great Britain as well.
Yeah.
Prime Minister.
Yeah.
And then you have King Charles now as the political, cultural custodian, of the history of that nation.
Mm.
So I think it was progressive for the AU to have set foot there. But I think the deep roots of the ethno issues, they run very deep. They're not easy to dislodge.
Mm.
I mean, you can have AU sitting here, South Africa, for an example. It doesn't mean that
that'll be changed.
We adhere to the principles they're driving,
yeah.
right? So there's Africa 2060, for an example.
Yeah.
Right? So just because the head office is here doesn't mean that the head office of your head is absorbing those head office principles there.
Yeah.
But the presence of such an institution in the country says a lot as well. There is something special about Ethiopia. And I'm arguing today that what has made them a very particular and special nation on the continent is that they have not been colonized.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And there's two things that I picked up that made them stick out, especially from that battle of Adwa, is that they were prepared and they were organized.
Mm.
Right. Preparation and organization.
Mm.
Right. And these are not necessarily out of this world solutions. Right. Sometimes we're wanting solutions that are way out, but it is the simple things of leadership that these guys are trying to take over. We see them in other parts of the continent, but let's prepare. How do we prepare? Right? It takes a thinking leadership to do that, thinking ahead that, you know what, we're going to defend our people, we're going to defend our land, we're going to maintain our independence. I don't want to dilute it for anybody.
Mm.
And also, let me dare say as well, that that is also an offshoot of of the biblical truth. There's no way that you can study the Bible or have the oldest Bible in the world and not see some of the outcomes of being a biblical nation, of being independent in thinking, being prepared, knowing that you have a role to play, that you must not allow people to enforce themselves onto the nation, to exploit. And they knew that. Okay, these guys are going to exploit our people. The emperor was very clear on those issues. So let's be prepared, and then let's organize ourselves better for those things. Whether our equipment is inferior or doesn't our equipment is superior, it doesn't really matter as long as we are well prepared and organized. I'm not suggesting that in other parts of the continent we're by far less prepared, but and that's a conversation for another day. But Ethiopia is the only one that was able to push back on that. And I think, you know, the biblical roots, I think, run very deep there with them. So if you and I mean, again, we're in an Adventist institution here. You know, we say that we are people of the Word, study the Bible. How can you allow injustice in your space? Just like privately now, not even talking nationally. Like in your space, study the Bible. The Bible abhors, God abhors injustice, unfairness, exploitation. So you study that Bible, but in your personal space, you're unjust.
Yeah.
There's a contradiction. So by the time you get into office, so you can safely assume that in their personal spaces, those principles were free-flowing. Because remember, like I said, they had converted from Judaism into Christianity, not from paganism.
Yeah.
Right? So already the religious the religious philosophy was there.
Was within them.
It was within them. It was there.
Yeah.
And also the Queen of Sheba.
Yes, I was about to come to that.
That issue as well.
Yeah.
So Ethiopia is quite central in the Old Testament as well. And Kush, which is South Sudan, which I mentioned last week.
Yeah.
Some interesting histories as well. Their army was called upon by Israel at some point to come and help them defend, you know, the temple. Very interesting things. But it's there in the Old Testament.
Exactly. It's amazing to see how Africa has played a crucial role in what we now see and define as Christianity today. And I think, suppose that unfair question still comes back. What do we have to show for that as the African continent? But we've got about 3-4 minutes. What's the solutions now? And we didn't even touch on the business side of things. What do business leaders have today? Because for me, it sounds like you've got this president who is the non-executive, who only shows up when he needs to show up, and that's what these non-executive directors do. They never really play any active role in the day-to-day thing. And so maybe we can't blame the president. Maybe he needs to set the tone for the vision, mission, structure, what type of any Ethiopia he wants to see, and let the prime minister and the rest of the others deal with it. And maybe he needs to build a coherent, cohesive one vision of Ethiopia at a national level that has, I suppose, bits and pieces of the different ethnocentric groups within Ethiopia, right? Take a bit there, take a bit there, take a bit there, and build one view, one cohesive dream that he has, and maybe try and articulate that to the rest of the Ethiopians, and then let the prime minister and everyone else do the job of making sure that they actually implement that. So maybe at some stage we can't blame the president, but let's talk to the CEO and the COOs then in business. What should they do in bringing the country together now?
So there's already a root of some type of nationalism, right?
Yeah.
So whether it's ethno nationalism,
yeah,
federalism, or the national centralism.
Yeah.
Right. There's already a route that wants to dominate and drive things countrywide. So again, I think those engagements need to happen, draw attention to tough issues, protect everybody, give responsibility They mustn't be afraid to give responsibility to the different ethnicities, force them to work together. And some of the limitations I mentioned earlier, like access to technology, finance, infrastructure, that is an opportunity for the government to show leadership with the private sector, with business, in how do we become more technologically savvy as a country, how do we deal with network industries, etc. And government has an opportunity to take to take a lead. Same thing with finance. What's happening in the banking sector? They should take the opportunity to build their own financial institutions. One of the major benefits of nationalism is the protection of the people. If it's done effectively and efficiently, you can have a sustainable development. Of course, there's the other side of the argument, but I'm saying they already have this passion to drive a national agenda.
So now, national good.
So now let's bring this passion, let's redirect it, right? Let's develop the economy.
I like that.
Let's develop infrastructure, and let's put these foreign reforms in place. Let's have a proper working together document in terms of sharing responsibility among the different ethnicities, bring them together and deliberately task them with very difficult difficult issues. And I think that that can be a solution. And again, looking at their history, they were not defending against the Italians as different ethnicities.
It was one.
They were defending as Ethiopians. Tigrays or Amharas, Amhara or Oromo. We're defending it as Ethiopians. And so same thing with the Hutus and the Tutsis. Now it's very difficult to say I'm a Tutsi or a Hutu. But that's taken many years of work. That actually we've got a national identity. We've got to work on the national identity, which must be fostered by the current leadership. That have been in power, I think, since 1991, there in Ethiopia. And again, cleaning on the historical roots that we've been able to be prepared. We've been able to organize against external forces. So it means, therefore, we can be as prepared and better organized to drive economic growth. We've shown that the country is one of the highest growing areas. So that's been there. Now, what more if you quiet down the fires of this ethno approach and actually build in a national identity? Ethiopia, I promise you, in the next 10, 15 years, will be a shining star on the continent. It already is, but it can become an even better shining star, because that is what I've seen as the major stumbling block is the ethno-national federalism issue. That's it. Otherwise, the green offshoots are there. Right, the economy can grow. They've shown that it's a high growth area, but people are scared to invest because there's this issue. You know, but besides that, history tells you that they can, and if they're better prepared, they can be better organized. They're able to move ahead. That's why President Mbeki, when he speaks about Ethiopia, he always lands on this point that it's important for people to know how Ethiopia resisted at the Battle of Adwa in 1899. How did they do it? And as we continue to reflect on that as a key issue and celebrate that and build on those gains, Ethiopia, not just Ethiopia, but the whole continent can be a better place with the right leadership.
You've summed it up very beautifully. I think we'll leave it at that. So Ethiopians, we can learn the model from them and let them draw from their ethnocentric federalism, as it were, and let them bring it to a national federalism. And that should help them build that particular country. Out of time, 2 minutes after 8 p.m. Thank you so much for listening to us and for joining us right here on Business Sense. Until next time, may God bless you. Good night.
Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.